This is Empowered Human Academy. Welcome home.
This is about love. This is about light. This is about the idea that you contain everything you will ever need.
And this life of yours, this is where you expand, you grow, and you remember who you are.
I'm Abe.
I'm Isaac.
In Empowered Human Academy, we join with humans of all kinds to feel the inspiration that can only come from empowered living.
The stories you hear today are unique, but the energy you hear today is yours too. So, with hearts wide open, let's begin.
Thank you for being here.
Hey crew, this episode is Pay What Feels Good. Rather than pulling in sponsors and paid advertisements, we are excited to try something different. I'll talk more about this at the very end of this episode, or you could read more at empoweredhumanacademy.com. Hello, empowered humans, and welcome back. It is so good to be with you. Before we dive into our next conversation, we want to let you in on our newest offering, Lightword Together. If you're curious about exploring the themes we cover on this podcast in a more interactive group setting, then Lightword Together is for you. Alongside bi-monthly group coaching sessions, you'll also receive access to guided meditations, our community Slack channel, as well as a library of past group sessions so you can enjoy everything we've all created thus far. Our group sessions are the 15th and last day of every month, and we'd love to see you there. To sign up and to learn more, head over to lightword.com/together.
This week's guest is our personal trainer and dear friend, Nate Baycott. With a background in both human development and positive coaching psychology, Nate brings a refreshing and nuanced perspective to the world of fitness. His coaching clients range from Olympic and CrossFit athletes to young kids. Whoever the client, he thoughtfully listens to their individual goals and circumstances in order to help them discover their own power to sustain them for the long game.
Nate has been an integral part of helping us build healthy workout rhythms into our days, which have added up to a happier, more grounded life over time. Throughout this conversation, we explore the idea of sustainable fitness, how to give yourself time and space to anchor to the moment, and what it means to walk yourself into the answers you already know.
We loved getting to unpack Nate's philosophy on life, emotions, and wellness. He brings his full self to life, and you can really feel that. His positive energy is contagious, and we can't wait for you to experience his light. So let's get into it. Hey everyone, welcome back to Empowered Human Academy. Today we have our great friend and personal trainer, Nate Baycott. Hey Nate, we're so excited to have you. Let's just dive into the conversation. We've been wanting to have you on our podcast for a long time. So let's go. Isaac, go ahead and ask the first question.
Well, firstly, how are you today?
I'm fantastic. Yeah, I've actually, it's been kind of cool. We talked about some of this stuff, I feel like months ago, and to see you guys take it and keep running with it and stuff like that, and then finally be a part of it. It's pretty darn cool.
Hell yeah. I'm excited about the history that has led up to this too. And we'll get into this in a second. But the thing that we like to begin with is a question of identity, not in terms of like how you'd introduce yourself to other people at a conference or to clients even, although there might be crossover. But when you come home and it's just you and you don't have to be anything for anyone, who are you? What words of identity do you choose for yourself?
Oh, I like that. That's a really good one. So I love calling myself a nerd because I think that is one of the best ways to put out that you're very passionate about different stuff. So I feel like I'm a very kind, diverse nerd.
I love that.
That's the way I would classify myself.
I love that.
Yeah.
That makes me super freaking happy. Okay, cool. So you gave me a quick definition of nerd, like somebody who's really enthusiastic and passionate about a subject. Talk to me about, go ahead.
No. Yeah. I would say somebody who's unapologetically enthusiastic or passionate about anything.
Yeah.
You can be a nerd about fitness. You can be a nerd about wellness. You can be a nerd about psychology. You can be a nerd about biochemistry. You can be a nerd about
fashion.
You can be a nerd about doing nails. You can be a nerd about anything. But I love it because for the longest time, there was that stereotype, like if you were a nerd, it was like a bad thing. And I think it's pretty darn cool when you're you're just unapologetically passionate about something. Like I have an older brother who loves playing Dungeons and Dragons, and he will not apologize for it. And I'm like, good for you. Everybody's got their own passions. Let it be. Don't apologize for them.
Absolutely. How does kindness play into that? Or is that its own thing?
I mean, it plays into it and it's its own thing. Sure. I just feel like for the most part, everything that I want to output and everything I want to input, I'm going to bias on the side of the person's either coming from a good place or I'm coming from a good place that is kind. Mm-hmm. I'd rather have that as my default than have a default of defensiveness because I feel like you shut yourself off and people can tell that about you if you have more of a defensive personality. So I'd rather come off as kind and people be like, wow, he's a really kind person, because I feel like that opens them up to me a little bit more.
Yeah, for sure. And diversity was the third thing you said. Talk to me about diversity.
About diverse.
You said the word diverse.
Diverse. Yes. So diverse when it comes to my passions and my interests. I love fitness. I love training, but I also like playing Blizzard RPG type games. I also love reading fantasy fiction. And that was not the case until like my mid 20s, I think.
Oh, okay.
While I am a fitness and nutrition coach and help people with lifestyle stuff, my background is in psychology. So I'm also a huge nerd when it comes to, and like diverse wise into like everything from neurobiology to, you know, how gut health affects mental health and stuff like that. So, and then, you know, at one point I played the trumpet. I randomly will spend like 3 to 6 months refreshing my American Sign Language app and stuff like that. So it's, I just love to dive into various disciplines or pools of knowledge, even if it's just so I can say, yeah, it took me 3 months and I barely scratched the surface there. I could not like retain as much as I can, which is absolutely fine, but at least I tried it.
Yeah, totally.
So
in what way do these like new fields come to you? Like what inspires you to pick up ASL for a month or something like that?
Honestly, working with people.
Okay.
So I was really fortunate in that when as I've progressed through my coaching and stuff, I've worked with a lot of different people, lifestyles, athletes, and stuff like that. And you really grasp a appreciation for populace that might be not overlooked by like on purpose, but just overlooked because the market or the structure of an industry just it ran the direction and didn't have them. Mm-hmm. So when it came to ASL, I think it just popped into my head one day that, oh, what if we had somebody who could only speak sign language come in? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I wonder how many coaches or trainers actually know sign language. Mm-hmm. I wonder how many people who only speak sign language don't seek out a coach or a trainer because they can't communicate. And then from there, I was just like, I need to learn something like this. Like at minimum, I need to be able to say, this is my name. What's your name? I have very diminished sign language skills, but we can work together or something like that. Because even that little bit of consideration or butchering ASL, I'm at least trying to meet them on their level. Cool. So
no, that completely makes sense. And that's beautiful too. Like that, I've never heard of like that being a market segment, like physical.
Nobody has. It's crazy. Totally.
I mean, even though it's so real, I mean, there are needs, there are all types of needs, right? And oftentimes you're just focused on one specific sector of or group.
Absolutely. And in my undergrad, so my undergrad was human development with an emphasis in adulthood and aging. So essentially working with an aging populace. And it was on the surface, just working with aging adults, resources for getting older, you know, navigating Social Security, all that stuff. But I also was fortunate enough to get a certificate in multicultural studies. And what I found was when you're working with adults that come from various socioeconomic, you know, different ethnic backgrounds, stuff like that, if you don't know at least a decent portion of the way that culture or that history is, you might as well be speaking different languages when you're trying to help them. Mm-hmm. So context on their background is everything. And then you start expanding that out, it's like, okay, we have an aging populace. Okay. Mm-hmm. We have a deaf or a mute populace. Okay. Now we have potential for adaptive people who maybe they don't have, maybe they have two wrist fusions, maybe they have vertebrae fusions. So it just expands out. Like I love working with people, so I don't want to be really limited.
Yeah.
So when you got your master's in what?
Education and counseling psychology with an emphasis in sport. So it was the blanket term was positive coaching.
Positive. Okay. So talk to me about positive coaching. You've been our coach for a while now. We've done a lot of, you know, things together in the gym and outside through traveling. And a reason why we love working with you is because you it's not just about the deadlift. It's not just about the squat. It's about like what's going on before and after and during in the mind and the body. And I'm just curious about if you can share your approach in positive coaching and why it's important.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll try to keep it brief because I could talk on it for a very long time. Totally. But the idea behind positive coaching or using coaching as a means to work with people is that I am actively working with various people to seek out appropriate doses of stress. And that could be, you know, somebody who has never done physical activity before and giving them 3 sessions a day of 10 minutes of climbing stairs. Or it could be a CrossFit competitor who had done nothing but their own gym programming and they want to expand into the competition field, and all things in between and outside of that. So the whole goal with positive coaching is that you're facilitating like these people remembering that in the pursuit of the appropriate stress or hurdles, hardships, stuff like that, you're actively choosing a route that's going to be difficult because you know on the other side of it, you're going to progress. Mm-hmm. And it can range from all sorts of stuff, but there's been, sadly, a lot more history of coaching and guiding from an avoidance maneuver, if that makes sense. Okay. So people will do things and will pursue different feats to avoid getting sick rather than to push for optimal health and wellness. And it's a very key difference that people need to understand, is that that's one of the biggest things that motivates like my industry of like fad diets and, you know, very intense boot camps that are well beyond the capability of a new person to stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's not good because the retention is so minimal. Mm-hmm. If somebody, and there's a place for everything. I'm not here to say that like certain business models or certain boot camps don't work for people. What I'm saying is that when you pursue something in with the idea of that you are avoiding a negative consequence, it's built on around fear of that. Rather than, and to me, a fear of something means that you don't understand or don't control it.
Okay.
So when you pursue something with a more positive coaching side or a more optimization route, that means that, hey, I know I'm not good at this, but I'm going to be familiar with it. Mm-hmm. I'm going to find some chaos with it and get really comfortable in that chaos. And then I'm pretty much bulletproof to it.
Sure.
And that can adapt to anything.
Okay, cool. So we're talking about avoiding the negative and chasing the positive. It's clear that you've got that as a mindset in your coaching, and I've seen how that plays out in the stuff you've written for us over the years. Mm-hmm. Do you work to shift that mindset into your clients as well? Like, is this a thing that you try to teach explicitly with terms or indirectly through experience, or does that make sense?
A little more case by case, but it's a little more indirect because at surface, most of the time people will find me or decide to work with me because they have fairly, in the grand scheme of things, short-term goals. They want to be stronger, be fitter, this, that, and the other. Mm-hmm. But in that pursuit, I'm a big fan of building habits and strategies into your life rather than giving something that can be so amazing and beneficial and ripple out to so many things like fitness and health and wellness and nutrition. I'm a big fan of making that a healthy lifestyle thing. Mm-hmm. So I don't care if you're competing for, you know, an Olympic year, or you're just wanting to get to 70 years old and have a moderate six pack. Yeah. Being healthy, being fit, having a control over both the psychological and the physical side of yourself, it can only improve, or it can only be a good thing as long as you stay on top of it. It doesn't matter to me the avenue in which you do it, but you have to have some degree of it in your life and plan to have that in order to have, in my opinion, a healthy, long, successful life.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
That distinction feels related to what you said earlier about using coaching as a means for working with people. Like, it might not even be specifically about the act of coaching. It's mm-hmm. at least what I heard in those words was that it's more about like getting to work with people. What's your relationship to that? Like, they may approach you for something specific right now, and that specific might be coaching. How do you think about working with people for the, like, in a more abstract sense, like with their entire life in mind or with your entire relationship in mind? Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. So that actually kind of comes down to my base question whenever I work with somebody, and it is, what is their function? Mm. Because everybody coins the term or everybody utilizes the term functional and functional fitness, functional this, functional that. To me, function is about what this person's life is and where they want it to go. That's function. So some people will say isolation exercise like curls or something like that is not a functional movement. Well, if this person wants to do a bodybuilding or figure show, I'd say it's very functional. Or if this person has tendonitis issues or tendinopathy issues in their elbow, it's very functional because our goal is to get them and work with them on what they do as their body and their lifestyle's function.
Yeah.
So that's probably the biggest or hope that I could answer your question is that what is someone's function and our discussion of where they want to go with that? And I kind of have to meet them there and then slowly guide them, but staying within the confines of what their function can be. Because I'd be, if I didn't take someone else's function in their life in mind, I'd be writing very irresponsible assignments and goals and action items and stuff like that because it wouldn't fit. Totally. It's like taking somebody who's doing powerlifting and being like, you're a mom of three, you can do this.
Yeah.
No, that doesn't make sense. That's not their function.
I've got this big grin on my face because like, this feels like it turns upside down. Like the model of like, you have a need and I have a, not upside down. I was going to say it turns upside down the model of like, you have a need and I have a service. Like this is not just transactional. You're discovering something unique every time you interact with a person, which is there any trouble with scaling that? Like you have a business. How do you do that kind of one-off unique discovery every time? Does that make sense?
So more often than not, when I have initial conversations or athlete questionnaires or evals, I'll find that the person I'm discussing stuff with more often than not doesn't need the services that I can offer. And it's because, and mind you, I never really try to turn away people, but I also do not pull them into my services unless I think they're going to adhere and they're ready to do that.
Totally.
Having said that, anytime I leave a conversation with someone who wants to work with me directly or wants to pursue something that they came to me for advice for, we kind of give them a good, better, best option. And more often than not, they'll leave the conversation with a good option, which is, hey, here's this free resource of 2 to 3 bodyweight workouts a week. And here is, you know, a link to a really short food article that breaks down how to make your meals balanced. And it's like, if you can do that for a month, I'll check back in with you and let's see how you're feeling. More often than not, that will work with their budget. It'll work with their timeliness and their finances. There's a lot of factors that go into it, but I think that's kind of a unique thing in that like probably about 75% of the people that I talk with, I don't end up working with right away because you have to have certain ducks in a row or certain, you have to make yourself mentally ready to adhere to new changes, habits, and stuff like that. So if you can do really simple stuff on your own and hold yourself accountable, perfect, you'll work with me. But I feel it's really irresponsible for me to be like, all right, I'm gonna take you through a 2-week assessment and then 3 months of programming, and you're going to pay me this for the next 3 months. And that'd be the end of our conversation. That's kind of irresponsible of me because that person might be putting themselves into a real financial bind to make that happen, as well as we have not really established like communications and or boundaries of what they're actually willing to change.
Yeah,
totally.
I love this from a, I'm going to coin a term, holistic business perspective. Like the way that you are as a business person, then makes you good for the entire system, not just good for yourself. And that feels really important.
And you talked about being, you know, ready to make that change and how, like in your own experience with working with people and just in your psychology work, how do people know if they're ready to make that change? And how I've also noticed that like in the process of becoming something new or developing new habits, in this case, in the gym or something, it took a long time for me to even realize if I was ready. I just kind of like went in for it because I wanted to change, but I didn't know how long it was going to last. So how can one, I don't know, be aware of kind of the journey ahead and realize if they're ready or not? Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's interesting because it's almost like a salesy tactic But in conversations with people, a lot of times they will give you the answer and it's up to you to formulate the questions around it because it challenges their answer. They already have something preconceived in their mind. So what I like to do is when somebody comes to me and they're like, look, I need to get in shape. I had this catalyst of a moment or something, and I need to do this. I need to do that. I need to do that. It's like, okay, well, what's your schedule like? And they list it off and they're, I don't know, a 55 to 60 hour a work week at like a loan officer or something like that. It's like, wow, you have a really limited schedule, don't you? It's like, yeah, I do. It's like, okay, what is your background and experience? Then I list that off, and sometimes it's nothing, sometimes it's a lot. And by basically structuring these questions to challenge what they have in mind for themselves, they'll get to a point where they're like, maybe I really am not sure that I know what I want, or I'm not sure what I want. Mm-hmm. And that's when the real like mapping can take place, because I'm essentially illustrating that if you come into a conversation with your mind already made up, to a professional, one of two things is going to happen. They're going to give you exactly what you want, which is very rarely what works.
Totally.
Right. Why did you seek out a professional to essentially give you what you think you need? It's like you had no clue before this. Mm-hmm. Or they're going to break down the answer that you gave them and find a whole bunch of flaws in it for you. And then there it's like, okay, so what I really need is to find 3 30-minute windows in a week where I can be active. It's like, now we're talking about what you can do. So that's, like I said, about 75% of people will leave our conversations with action items that have nothing to do with me.
Well, and I think it's so interesting because we've been fed this, like, you gotta, you know, work out until you're like grinding and you can't breathe, or, you know, you gotta do X and gotta do Y. And oftentimes it really just doesn't fit with, one, our immediate goals, and two, it doesn't even fit with our personalities. And that's why for me in my journey, and even working with you, we've known each other for many years, like, I used to be in a lot of environments where I used to be in that, you need to do it like this or else it's not right. Mm-hmm. Versus now with me and you, I give you feedback all the time and what feels good, what doesn't. It's not that I'm not putting in the work. It's like, if my TFL is very tight, you're not going to overstress that because that's not the right thing to do next. So I appreciate that you go at it in this like really sustainable model, like kind of a paradigm, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, if we're not doing it for sustainability, why were we doing it?
Cheers. I hear that. I've appreciated for a long time, and especially in this conversation, the way you talk about how people think and how their priorities and motivations, and also their understandings, how they play out. Talk to me about your relationship with your own way of thinking, the way you reflect on your own mental internals and how you make sense of the world. I don't know which direction I want to go in this. I think what I want to get out of this part of the conversation is, for those people listening in, something useful about like the reflection on one's own thoughts and how we analyze the choices that we make and what our motivations are and how those things play out.
Mm-hmm. So I'm going to try to answer this as best I can.
Okay.
When I process things for myself, the first thing that I really make peace with is that regardless of what I'm feeling and or thinking, it's okay. Hmm. Like, I think too many people fall into categories of being extrinsically motivated, where the goal is to obtain something outside of themselves, which those have a place, but it's a shaky foundation to base your decisions off of, as well as toxic positivity. Is they will build themselves up over and over and over again because they think that negative and or maybe even more melancholy or neutral emotions or actions or lack thereof are a bad thing, and they try to stay away from it. So they're all go, 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 I got this. And then, you know, essentially you're burning on rocket fuel until you're going to crash. So that's the first thing I tell myself, is like, no matter what, I could have a full 1,000-word journal entry and it analyzes it and it's like 98% negative.
Yeah.
But that's okay.
Yeah.
That is 100% fine.
Totally.
And then once I kind of see like, okay, I'm feeling really upset, I give myself essentially like a timetable or a moment or like a time to deal with it. Okay. If it's positive or if it's negative, I let it have its victory. I let myself be angry about a defeat. or I let myself really marinate on something that's kind of in between.
Yeah.
And then the hardest part is usually when it comes to like navigating change, habits, or simple day-to-day stuff, I either make peace with the fact that there's nothing actionable that I can do in that moment. And I can reevaluate it at some other point in time. I have to give it that time. Or I make myself have action items. And if they're not time sensitive to that moment, I fill them in and I let them be. And I think a lot of people are very accelerated in thinking that something has to be done now if it's negative. If it's positive, they want more. They don't. A lot of people that I've worked with have trouble anchoring to a moment, if that makes sense.
Okay. Yeah.
Because something in it is already leapfrogging them to the next.
Okay.
Interesting.
So when I do stuff for myself, I make sure to let everything kind of have its own significance if I can. And even if it's like, you know, I hit a PR clean and jerk or something like that, something very specific to me.
Yeah.
And it's a celebration and stuff like that for like 2 or 3 minutes, but I have to coach a class in like 20. Mm-hmm. So it's like, that seems pretty cut short if it's a lifetime PR, if you're working towards something. But I will 100% after I'm done coaching stuff like that, go back, look at my video, or I'll write about it and like detail everything I felt in that. And I have my victory moment right then and there. Like it's so quick and easy to get leapfrogged to something else and completely lose a moment that's pretty cool or a pretty good learning experience.
Sure.
And you just don't give it its time or give it its due. So that's my own process with stuff, and it seems to work out for the most part, because it's either I have given the time to the more negative side of stuff to learn from them and let them marinate, and actually I know it's weird, but like giving yourself time to cry about something.
Yeah,
it's so crazy. That so diving a little bit behind the curtain, this past year I lost two of my grandparents, my grandpa and my grandma. They both helped raise me, so it was a rough loss. When I learned of my grandma, it was at work. I had 2.5 hours left of work. And I just listened to my dad like choke up to me on the phone. Hardest moments of my life. But in that moment, I knew and trusted myself enough to know I can handle work right now. I don't need to necessarily implicate others for something that I trust myself to know that when I get my time, I'm going to mourn. I know for a fact I will give myself time to feel the sadness and stuff like that. Sometimes it overwhelms. And there's nothing wrong with that, but it was a very cool feeling to be confident in myself enough to know that even though this is a very big hardship, I'm going to give it its time. I'm going to give it its due. It's just right now I know and trust myself enough to know that it's going to come later. So I don't have to let it consume me and or leapfrog me into radical decision making, right? Because it's a very easy situation to do a panic move and be like, I need coaches to cover me. I need to do this now. It's like, whoa, wait a second. You know yourself. You know that you absolutely loved your grandma with everything that you could. You know you want to be there for your dad, but nobody's going to benefit, especially me, by making these panicked leapfrog lateral moves. It's like I can push this off for 2 hours. And when I got home, I bawled. I sat in this exact chair. I think I wrote probably 1300 words, just a straight write up about her. I called it a mother's love because she, don't get me started. So I called it a mother's love, but, that was one of those times where by practicing the way I've been practicing, I knew I could handle these negative situations because I knew I would make time for them, prioritize them, let them marinate, learn from them and move forward.
Yeah. That's fascinating. I didn't expect that a discussion that involves like anchoring in a moment to include stepping back for a sec and giving ourselves the permission and trust to reorganize how those moments kind of occur in time. That's interesting. Most discussions that I've heard about like feeling your emotions take like, it's a binary, like either you're shutting down your emotions and that's bad and you shouldn't do that, or you're doing the right thing, which is to let your emotions have the time. But the trust to allow myself to like deal with what I have to right now and then give myself expansiveness to experience whatever I need to experience. Where does that trust come from for you?
Because I am probably the most intense, passionate and stuff like that about making sure this is very in tune. And I don't mean from like a physical standpoint, because there's plenty of times where I'll eat junk food. There's plenty of times where I'm almost as heavy as I've ever been right now because I'm trying to fill out a weight class, but like I've been leaner, I've been healthier, I've been all of that. But when it comes to being in tune for me, mentally, spiritually, emotionally, it's about keeping consistent check-ins and conversations with myself. And that comes from everything, from journaling, meditation, even just walks. I will go and I'll walk around my yard and I will talk to myself. It sounds insane. But if you can't have honest internal dialogue, conversations with yourself where, you know, you might be emotional or you might be the objective mindset arguing against your emotions or vice versa. Sure. If you can't have those with yourself, good luck trying to navigate them with other people involved, because that's variables you have zero control over.
Totally.
So in doing that for myself for years, I mean, it stems from like small journaling, stuff like that, but in doing that for myself for years and really understanding, like diving deep into the benefits of that, it makes me very comfortable at home. And this is my home. So I'm not, if I'm scared, I'm scared. Like I have no problem admitting that I've been and will continue to be scared in certain moments or very sad to the point of tears. I think a lot of people, I wouldn't say necessarily a lot of people, but there are a lot of times where people will be so forward moving or so avoidance behavior and stuff like that, that they don't check in with themselves. And they'll get to these crazy situations where they look at their life and they're like, how the heck did I get here? And I am not happy. And so it's pretty amazing.
Well, and it's cool because you're continually checking in with yourself. So that way, when you reach a place, you know what you're dealing with in all ways. I'm curious, and this might pivot the conversation a little bit, but it has to do with like, you kept on saying, I want to be at home. And you pointed to your body, like just really connected. And I feel like sometimes in a culture that where masculinity is a thing, have you ever felt like judged either by yourself or other people that you were like in touch with your emotions as a man?
Sure. I feel like it's going to happen. You know, people, like I said before, people who do not understand or fear certain people who fear certain things or judge certain things, it just means they really don't understand it. Because if you did, there's a deep calm with understanding. And you don't have to agree at all. But if you, at the very least, can understand where something or someone or a situation has come from or developed and stuff like that, there's more calm about it. There's way more calm. And so there's been a couple points in my life where the potential to have very little and or nothing but self was very real.
Okay.
And in that, I knew I needed that to be a very comfortable place.
Yeah. Yeah. You talked already about like a couple for verticals for that. You talked about like physical, mental, emotional, spiritual. What, for somebody who's new to the concept of establishing like a sense of comfort at home or considering oneself as home, what would you say to somebody who's just, it's just now dawning on them that can feel like home?
Take a look at your home. Really be honest with yourself about things that are messy or you don't like, or you want a little different. And at some point, not right then and there, but at some point, make a plan. And it can be something so subtle as, you know, I have a journal right here that I love. It's the 5-minute journal, and it's literally got morning prompts and afternoon and evening prompts. And it's, I think you write 8 sentences in it. And so if you take those short moments that you might have and take a look at your home, as it were, and there's something that has consistently egged you on, like, I know this is weird, but like, if you come into your living room day by day and you're just like, I am not a fan of where that couch is. And that is something you say to yourself every single day for 2 weeks. And you see it popping up on paper I'll be damned if you don't move that couch at some point. Like, you either you move that couch or 6 months down the road and you're going to bang your shin on that couch and you're going to be like, why is this couch here? And you're like, you know, I told myself for the last 6 months I need to move it. And so it's a really kind of a wake up call when you can write that stuff down, or at least tell yourself over and over and over again that there are certain things that are less optimal, or there are certain things that are could be amazingly optimal that you want to make sure are prioritized. But either way, by doing those self check-ins on that stuff, like if I'm talking to somebody new, it's how often do you really give yourself an objective look inward? And a lot of people don't. And it's because there are so many distractions. There are so, everybody wants to work harder, earn more, experience more, you know, eat the best food, but at the same time, eat healthy. It's like, there's, like I said, we've had these conversations. There's so many nuances to all these decisions that are external. And then if you just sit back and look at it and be like, am I comfortable just right here? Like, if you're hungry, you eat. But if you take a look back and you're just like, why do I feel like crying at the end of a work day? It's like, be honest with yourself and change something. So getting people to turn inward on a schedule, or at least fairly regular, is one of the biggest pieces of advice, and writing things down. That's the two biggest pieces of advice I would give to people on any of that stuff. Cause you are gonna see some trends.
Cool. That's almost hilariously contrasting. Well, so simple, yes, but the notion of like the grand philosophical exercise of self-reflection, do it on a schedule and write it down. These are very concrete steps.
Cause well, and like we talked about before, if you go to seek out somebody, like if somebody comes to work with me and they don't check in with themselves, they don't know how they got there. The catalyst that brought them to me was something dramatic and out of the norm and all this other stuff. I can't help them. I can try, but they don't have the answers as far as like what they're feeling. They can't even tell it to themselves. So if I have a 30-minute flow session and it's like, how did this feel? It was fine. It's like,
Like, what does that mean?
Do you say that a lot about a lot of things? Like, how was work today? Fine. How'd you sleep? Fine. It's like,
And what's your relationship to that when you see it in somebody that you are working with or who wants to work with you? Is that something that you, I'm not going to put words in your mouth. What do you do as a service provider in those situations?
I'm very well versed and practiced at getting people to outwardly be honest about what they're really thinking and feeling. So for example, perfect example. There's plenty of times where you'll get into a workout and something didn't go right. Something curveball, could be internal, could be external, this, that, or the other.
Probably my shoulder.
Could be shoulder. Could be TFL. Could honestly be that the energy wasn't there. Could be your stomach hurting. Could it be anything. And I'll say, you know, how did this go? And you usually don't hold back, but there are times where you're just like, oh, it's okay. Like you'll just kind of brush it up. Like, you know, you're not happy about it, but you can't quite put words to it yet. And so I'll illustrate it out. I'll say, okay, well, you just did 6 trap bar deadlifts at X amount of weight, you know, for so many rounds. 3 months ago, that would have sucked. A year ago, it would have seemed impossible. And today you didn't feel good and you still did it. And then I just keep unrolling it and unrolling it. And then, you know, at a certain point, whoever I'm discussing with is like, you know what? I didn't feel good, but I got it done and that's pretty cool. And I'm happy about that. It's like, okay, so you're happy that you did a good workout today. And even despite feeling bad, and it's like, yeah, I am. Or could go the other way. So you wished you felt better. It's like, it's like, so you don't feel like you had a good training session. It's like, I feel like it was limited. Okay, well, what can we do to make it feel better next time? Sleep better, eat all this, that, or the other. So either way, we're getting an answer. And it can be it can absolutely be a negative one. I do not like when people try to fluff up something that's bad. Like, it is totally okay to say this freaking sucks.
Well, and going back to the toxic positivity, I think, like, I mean, Isaac and I talk about this a lot. Like, I am very, very flowy with what I'm feeling at any given moment most of the time. And I'm like, yeah, I'm pissed. Or like, yes, I'm joyful. And none of it, all the negative emotions, like, run through me. But they I don't identify with them. And I think sometimes when people think that they're complaining or they're going through a hard time, then they think that they're negative and they're not grateful. Like, I'm grateful as F. And yeah. also, I'm freaking pissed right now. Mm-hmm. And you can be both. You know what I'm yeah. saying? Or even if you're freaking pissed and not grateful in that moment, that doesn't mean, like, that is what it is in that moment. And honoring that gives me so much freedom to then mm-hmm. do something about it versus Absolutely. Trying to repress it.
That. So I'm here, and I want to know if I'm hearing this correctly. I'm hearing a lot of just like complete unloaded acceptance for what is, coupled mm-hmm. with a focus on being actionable about whatever that is. Is that a fair summary? Mm-hmm. What would you add to that?
Yeah. Yeah. So building off what Abe was kind of talking about, one of my favorite things to tell people to kind of help get their bearings, if you will,
yeah.
when they're reaching some sort of friction, some sort of trouble, yeah. is I say that you have worked this hard to have these types of responsibilities. Mm-hmm. So when you think about that, it's like, I built myself into a problem because I worked my butt off. Mm-hmm. So I'll have, like, I do it to myself all the time is I'll sit there and I'm like, I've got these clients to get rid of and I got to do this at the gym and all this other stuff. And I'll sit back and I'm just like frustrated and all this other stuff. But I'm like, 2 years ago, I was nowhere near this level of good at what I am.
Yeah.
So that's a pretty cool bearing to have. It's like, oh, you're right. I literally worked myself into this fully aware, yeah, which means totally. I know how to handle it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm taking this super abstract answer this however you want to, and borrowing the language that you gave me earlier in this conversation, what is your function?
I mean, I've got a couple, but I'd say if I could, I'm going to give you the answer that is, it's going to go real simple. So I'll say this, it took me 32 years of a lot of different experience, and that's still young, but it took me 32 years to come up with this function that blanket statement, if I will. At the end of my life, I want anybody who knew me at minimum to say he was a good man. And so when I make decisions on stuff that I do in my life, it's because I want to be remembered as a good man. Mm-hmm. So I do my own fitness and stuff because if I'm telling people that, you know, pursuing certain physical, mental stuff like that, hurdles or hardships intentionally with the right dose to optimize and grow and strengthen is something I need to do that. I need to be consistent with what I say. Yeah. I need to be kind. Like if you're a good person, you're probably pretty kind to almost everybody you meet. If you're a good man or a good person, you don't let disagreements and or differences keep you separate or walled up from other things. Like for me personally, I can't stand it when people are like, oh no, so-and-so believes something completely different than me, or like political stances or even religious stances, stuff like that.
Yeah.
I am not a fan of being like, that person does this, so I am totally blocked off to them. It's like, I've met people who have the complete opposite side of the spectrum to me when it comes to religion, politics, all sorts of stuff.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean you can't be a good person to them. Mm. Like, have they come in and attacked you? No, normally they haven't. Their existence should not be a move against you. Yeah. It's not a zero sum relationship with mankind. Okay. It's be a good man and be a good person for me, or be a good man for me, be a good person in general. And let that affect your decisions. If I'm going to be a good man, I'm going to be a good coach. I'm going to be a good partner for health. I'm going to be a good dog dad. I'm going to be a good home care person and stuff like that. So it's a very short, brief blanket statement, but my function is to be just good at what I do in my life.
Yeah,
and it's very simple, but it carries a lot of weight to it.
Totally.
It's really easy to let go of trying to be good. And sometimes you really want to be a dick, but
so true. So
it's true. There, and there's nothing wrong with knowing in yourself, like you've got a little bit of an angry savage in you that you could let out on somebody else.
Yeah.
Nothing. Yeah. We would be silly to think that we are always above that.
100%.
But we 100% can be knowing and understanding and controlling of it.
Totally.
And that's why I like to lift heavy weight. because it lets me get out some stress sometimes.
I love that. So.
Sure. That makes sense. Not shutting that off or down, but giving your expression. There's something that you said earlier here, like when you're telling the story about when you heard that your grandparent had passed, mm-hmm. like you were at the gym and in your story, you were saying that like, it's not useful for me to implicate everyone else around me in this thing that I'm experiencing at the moment. So mm-hmm. giving yourself, yeah, I guess this comes back to what you said earlier about giving yourself an intentional moment to experience something that you need to feel through. Is that right?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. So I could have, the easy thing to do in that moment, or in a moment where you are met with a opposition or some type of external factor that really throws you off your rocker, and it's usually with some type of negative consequence or occurrence.
Yeah.
The easiest thing to do is to let it derail you and have it affect an unknown amount of time in your life. That's the easiest thing to do, is to succumb to it, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And sometimes, you know, it's absolutely okay. Like nobody stays on their track,
yeah,
100% of the time. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I was comfortable and confident enough with myself to know in that moment that I, with that knowledge, I can still do my job. Mm-hmm. I can still make a great class for anybody coming in to see me. I can still mm-hmm. coach people. I can still get quality work done.
Sure.
And then when I get home later, I am going to talk to myself. I'm going to cry. I'm going to journal. Mm-hmm. I am going to, if I want to talk to my family about it, I will. If I want to just write down memories of sure. my grandma or something like that, I will. I knew in that moment that I can still be a good person. And then later on, let the negativity consume me, do whatever it needed to, give it sure. its time, give it sure. its due, and then come right back to being a good person.
Mm, totally.
Or it never really leaves you. It's just letting that come to the surface.
Sure. Totally. It sounds like that's part of being good to yourself. Is that fair?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. If you're going to be good or be optimal or whatever, mm-hmm. if you can't do it to self first, mm-hmm. it's going to be a tall order to do it externally for mm-hmm. other people or for another job or for responsibilities outside of yourself.
Mm-hmm. Totally. I think that takes a level of mastery and a lot mm-hmm. of practice, which is great.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
We have a couple more questions.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious. I'm going specific
because
mm-hmm. I like going specific.
Go for it.
Given your experience with your own journey in knowing yourself and practicing showing up and being honest, and also being able to work with a myriad of clients with different backgrounds and stuff, a lot of people want to change, but mm-hmm. it's hard too, because change is hard, and then building
new
habits is hard and scary sometimes for folks. And especially in like the fitness department, especially, I mean, I know for me, I knew nothing about my body when I first started 4 years ago, nothing. I couldn't do a squat, a bodyweight squat. And I've learned mm-hmm. and I continue to learn every day about my body. What specific piece of encouragement or advice do you have for our viewers? I mean, our listeners who might want to continue on their journey or start a new journey in their health and wellness that'll be encouraging and empowering to them.
So first things first, to me, I don't think there's much more empowering than being totally at home with yourself. Think about that confidence is when you can reflect inward and say that the majority of things that you have in your life that you have built in, controlled, put yourself into roles for, that you are totally comfortable with. That's a pretty emboldening, empowering feeling, right? Mm-hmm. So if somebody comes to me and they're like, I want to change, but I don't know what to do. Mm-hmm. That's where the regular check-ins with self and writing things down to me is invaluable. Mm. And if what that person needs is just somebody to help make that routine, fantastic. Mm-hmm. You and me, let's meet every other week for 30 minutes. Mm-hmm. Let's Zoom call if we have to. Mm-hmm. And let's talk about the things that you're writing down. Mm-hmm. That's it. It can be that simple to make a change, is to write two or three things down a day. You know, what do you like? What do you not like? Guarantee within 3 days, you're going to find something on that paper, on that whiteboard that has a common theme. Mm-hmm. And so you're essentially, you don't even know what questions to ask, but you're giving yourself an answer already. Hmm. And so if you're giving yourself an answer, then me and whoever this person is can work backward on what change can facilitate that. Because it's really funny how somebody can eventually walk themselves right into the answer that they're looking for without even knowing it. Hmm. Like, it's there, you know, but you just got it. It's written. It's like we said before, it's really hard and it's really humbling and really scary to just acknowledge the feeling that you're not as happy as you know you could be, or you're not as optimized as you could be. It's a scary feeling. So first, I guess that should be first before anything. You're justified in feeling that way.
Yeah.
Like, there, if something is bugging you, there's a reason. Mm. We might not have the answer yet, but I think this could help us find it. And a lot of times it does. And from there, it doesn't always, like we said before, about 75% of the people that I end up interviewing with don't end up working with me, but they will take small nuggets that we talk about and I will help them make a plan of implementation.
Yeah.
And then beyond that, you know, it's on you. A personal coaching philosophy of mine is that at any given point, I could have somebody leave working with me. Mm-hmm. I know that. I don't want this to be, it's a weird thing, but I don't want to work with you through your lifetime. I've got a lifetime to live too. Mm-hmm. But when you leave working with me, at minimum, I want you to have habits, practices, and strategies surrounding self-check-in, self-evaluation, and developing action items down. Mm-hmm. That's what I want. And it can be the simplest route ever, but you know, if you leave my services of like working with you as an athlete, cool. In 2 years, guarantee you learn some stuff.
Yeah.
In 6 months, guarantee you learn some stuff. Mm-hmm. 'Cause there you go. That's what I'm doing. I'm teaching you and helping you and harnessing you, whatever I can, but it's not a forever business.
Nope.
So you can't care. I cannot carry ego in thinking that I'm going to develop you for the rest of the time. Totally. It's not going to happen.
Well, and like the 6 month, 1 year, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, you mm-hmm. are continually teaching. And I think it's important to that self-check-in model, because then you know what needs to happen next versus just living on autopilot. And especially Bingo. If that autopilot isn't leading you to what you want, right? I mean,
exactly.
Like, you know,
exactly.
We have this awesome practice in doing that. I could talk.
I couldn't have said that better myself. Autopilot is where a lot of people live.
Yeah.
And it's very easy to do that.
Yeah.
It's very easy to do that, because there's a lot of things that can, you know, you can click an app on your phone 3 times and tomorrow you will have exactly whatever item and or food and or something that you need. Like it's very easy to find an autopilot and just cruise.
Totally.
But we also, there's terms, midlife crisis. There's terms mm-hmm. of like, you know, people trying, you know, weirdly enough, like figure competing or bodybuilding or something like that in their late 30s and 40s. It's like well beyond a time of like preconceived. That's not your optimal condition time. It's like, I know some very fit, good looking 40 to 50 year olds who to really prioritize that stuff didn't do it past or didn't do it before 30. Hmm. So yeah, it's like you said, autopilot is where a lot of people live.
And I try to automate the best I can to make that autopilot as high and as healthy as possible while also checking in with myself along the autopilot, if that makes sense. Like the
Absolutely.
Habit of going to the gym 5 days a week is mm-hmm. amazing, and that's on autopilot now. And also listening along the way, and we chatted this morning about changing things up in 6 weeks a little bit. Like it doesn't need to mm-hmm. be the same thing all the time. So
I want to bring it back to a conversation you and I had about 2 weeks ago, where there was a friction in your mindset about stuff, where certain workouts got missed or certain accessory pieces, or you guys were getting really busy, I think. Mm-hmm. And we had a discussion about how your baseline of being fit, or your baseline of the way you have structured your life, it's okay for certain things, certain components of your life, mm-hmm. I should say, to be on autopilot. Mm-hmm. As long as you know, and you intentionally set them there.
Totally.
Right. Yes. Like you with your nutrition, like you know that you like to eat a certain way, certain healthy levels, stuff like that, and to give yourself certain allowances. Yeah. So when it comes to the end of a week and there's opportunity for a treat or a drink or something like that, your autopilot is like, yeah, I'm totally balanced this week. I know I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
But you made that choice.
Yeah.
and you are fully comfortable with that choice. A lot of people are on autopilot and have no clue how they got there. And so when they realize it, it's a very uncomfortable spot to be, autopilot 36,000 feet and no clue where you're going.
Ooh, yeah, so true. We need to wrap this up. And that went by so quickly and I could talk about this for hours.
Yeah, that was real fast.
We asked two questions before we end off the conversation. And one of them is, what does an empowered Nate look like and feel like?
I guess, can you elaborate just a smidge?
Take it however you want.
I know that's the hard part though, is I'm like,
I can throw my words around it. Like when you're feeling lit up and you are entirely yourself and your expression is the best expression of you, what does that feel like and look like?
Okay. This might sound a little cheesy or maybe even a cop out, but my most empowered self is when I have in the moment a direct influence to somebody else achieving something that possibly was like thought impossible. Like I think I one of my happiest, most celebratory times as a coach was at FAST. I had a class, but only one person showed up, and it's a mom of two, working mom. She was just the quintessential like mom badass. And she just had these. She had a lot of preconceived notions about what she was and wasn't capable of, or you know. Ways things would be structured for her. And on that day, she deadlifted, I think it was 315.
Wow.
And on her previous max, I think she had only hit like mid twos. And you could always see when she got up to the bar, almost tentativeness. She's just like a lot of internal dialogue. Right. And so when she lifted the 315, the second that bar broke the floor and got to the top of it, she screamed at the top of her lungs throughout the entire lift. And I wish I had video of my reaction because I was springboarding around that room. We were the only two in there. But as far as what I look like empowered is when I have some type of small hand in somebody helping somebody achieve something like that. If I can do that, I am elated for hours on end because I love pursuing stuff myself and stuff like that. And I will get rowdy after a good lift. But man, to see that realization of somebody opening up essentially a whole world of possibilities from something so simple is incredible.
I feel it.
So yeah,
I like that super well.
Yeah, that is my most empowered feeling when I see somebody's face light up like I am freaking capable and this is just the beginning. Like it's just a boom. And I'm like, hell yeah, that's a good moment. That is an empowered moment for me.
I love that.
I can tell. It's the veracity of that is very clear in your body language and tone and all that jazz. Last question. We are right at time.
Yes.
What do you know for sure?
I know for sure you two are awesome. But also I know for sure that if you have a really good understanding of self, there's very few things that you can't handle given the right amount of time.
I love that.
Excellent. Thank you
so
much. This went by in about 2 seconds, but
literally,
it has been a full hour.
Yeah, I feel honestly I'm like 10 minutes in.
I know. That's what you call flow, and it's actually real. So,
Nate, thank you for your time. It is a delight talking with you and working with you. You're awesome.
That was a blast.
Hell yeah.
We got to do it again.
Yes.
Cheers.
Thank you, Nate.
Bye.
This podcast is the work of Lightward, our company, named for that toward the light direction which informs every single thing we do, including money, which means, like everything else, the way we earn revenue as a company is not based on industry norms. It's based on what feels deeply right and aligned by passing through the door that feels like it has more behind it, not less. And the way we keep this podcast going is all Lightward. It's pay what feels good. It's an exchange of value between you and us. We're keeping conventional podcast advertising totally out of this. Here's how pay what feels good works. We give you this episode because it feels good to do so. And then you consider, honestly, what number of dollars this episode is genuinely worth to you. I do not care if that's $3, $1,000, or literally $0 and a heart emoji, as long as that trade genuinely makes your day better. The energy there is the entire point, and that is what we're building our business on. No advertisers, no selling your attention, just you and us trading value in a way that builds us both up. So whatever the number, when you're done listening, head to empoweredhumanacademy.com and hit the pay what feels good button. We use this policy across our company's work, and I'm excited to bring it here to the world of podcasts. This is us voting for the world we want to see. Y'all, the whole point of everything is to open up ourselves in all the fullness we are made for, and then to create with everything that is real and true and bright. That's the work of a life. That's what we're working on. And you're here because you feel that for yourself, too. And we believe in you completely.
Thanks for joining us this round. And hey, for every conversation in this series, including this one, we've assembled a downloadable set of notes, table questions, a journal prompt, and some action steps that you can use to bring the energy and the lessons of this conversation home to your own life. Head to our podcast website, empoweredhumanacademy.com.
Hey, thank you for being here. Now, get out there and do something that feels exactly like you. We will do the same.
And for us, that includes bringing you the next conversation. We cannot wait. Have an awesome, awesome day.